Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Ron Edwards, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. The Don and Ron program. A beautiful evening here in the Twin Cities, if you will. A lovely sunset at the 8:31 hour Central Standard Time, if you will. People enjoying the warm weather. This time last week, we had still had about an inch and a half of snow, and 2 weeks ago, on this particular evening, we had just gone through a blizzard in the middle of April, if you will. This has been one tough, rugged winter here at the headwaters of the Mississippi, if you will. This is sometimes an unforgiving land that we, quote-unquote, the sons and daughters of the African live in. But we have a lot tonight. Our associate, Mr. Allen, will not be with us, but we must continue to carry on the show, if you will, the news, the information, and et cetera. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of things going on internationally, domestically, and certainly locally here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Unfortunately, violence continues to rack the streets of both of our cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, as well as the suburbs. We are not sure if there's any kind of plan for our listening audience tonight, if there's any kind of plan to deal with the violence that we are being confronted with. A very dangerous situation took place here over the weekend when, in two separate incidents, individuals driving automobiles, ramming the doors, robbed two of our largest gun stores here in the Twin Cities, one in the suburb of Robbinsdale, which is right there attached to that part of North Minneapolis, if you will, and then along Minnetonka Boulevard, which is kind of more like the Golden West, if you know what I mean, was also robbed. Burglarized, and it was more than burglary because these, whoever the desperados were, used the best possible means, and that is using vehicles to ram through the door. Authorities in Robbinsdale and Minnetonka are trying to, you know, low-key it and not create panic and et cetera, but the individuals, particularly in the robbery of Bill's gun shop there, a big facility too, has with it a shooting range in the basement of the building there on Highway 81, which goes through Robbinsdale, Minnesota, if you will. In fact, it's bordered by 81 on one side and West Broadway on the other. A lot of weapons stole, a lot of ammunition, and et cetera. These individuals apparently had quite a bit of time. You would have thought that with tearing down the and knocking out the front doors and et cetera, that police would have been there pretty quick. The city of Robbinsdale is a small community per se. 14,000, 15,000 police force of about maybe 26 or 27. Early in the morning, some are saying around 3 a.m. in the morning, this happened. Police didn't seem to be alerted or the alarms didn't go off or whatever happened. But it served enough time for a significant sweep, if you will, by the individuals. In fact, no one has a clue on who the burglars were, if you will, could be terrorists, if you will. In Minnetonka, pretty much the same situation. And a lot of discussion going on, and of course the general populace here in the Twin Cities are certainly not being briefed or updated or et cetera. But there's a lot of weapons and ammunition out there, and as we've said on a couple of these programs over the last couple of weeks, the spring offensive of violence in the streets of Minneapolis and St. Paul has begun, if you will. In fact, we're a couple of homicides ahead of this time last year here in Minneapolis and in our sister city of St. Paul across the Mississippi River. I think we are 3 to 4 homicides beyond this point in time last year, if you will. And by the way, homicides are taking shape and happening in all kinds of different methods, automobiles, beatings, you know, shootings, knifings, and et cetera. Kind of makes one wonder where all of this violence is coming from. But one of the aspects of what could be important here, and we're kind of breaking the story exclusively here on the Ron and Don program, coming to you again from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, is that some of the leadership, specifically led by a specific member of the ecumenical community, has served notice that they are calling for a reconciliation, a meeting of the quote-unquote black leadership, particularly of Minneapolis, where situations, relationships, and et cetera, have been strained for quite some time. We're understanding that they are talking about a specific date, if you will, of late May, to today, of course, is the second day of May in the year of our Lord. And so we are expecting that something should be by, I'm hearing the 22nd, 23rd, 24th of May, there should be a site selected. Kind of sounds like the actions that are going on involving our president, Donald Trump, and the big summit that he is talking about with the leader of North Korea. But here we are having our own summit, if you will, reconciliation. Relationships have been extremely tense in our beloved city, if you will. In fact, we are obligated to update you, our listening audience, domestically, locally, if you will. This past Friday, one of the more prestigious high schools in the city of Minneapolis, situated in the southwest corner of the city. In fact, that's the name of the school, Southwest Senior High School. On Friday evening, according to reliable law enforcement sources, if you will, who are requesting anonymity, not wanting their names to be released, if you will, or mentioned, but a fight bring over 200 Somalians and other combatants fought through the hallways and the grounds in and around Southwest, if you will, some leadership attempting to make the situation even more volatile by indicating that Minneapolis police officers, who apparently were actually overwhelmed by the volatility, if you will, of the confrontation, actually fired their weapons into the air, which here in the United States, that's really a no-no, if you will. That looks good in the movies, but that's not what the policy is. Injuries and et cetera are not being discussed. The local media here, television, radio, newspapers, basically wrote nothing about it, if you will. There has apparently been an agreement with the school district that the matter be suppressed and et cetera. But for the combatants, this comes on the heels of a serious confrontation at Northrop Auditorium on the campus of the University of Minnesota just 2 weeks prior to this past Friday, where Somali youth and Minneapolis and University of Minnesota police did battle. The Somali community maintained that they were ambushed, disrespected, just generally beat up on, if you will. Some are saying that this is a fallback to the tensions that are existing within the Somali community. The Somali community is under as an outgrowth of the Mohamed Nord situation. Mohamed Nord, a Somali officer who has been charged with murder in the third degree. First time anything like that has happened to a Minneapolis peace officer since the days of horse-drawn carts and et cetera, like back in the 1880s, if you will. The county attorney here, the powerful Mike Freeman, a man who has let it be known that he will ride herd on the Negro community and black community, quote-unquote, has indicated that he intends to press for the maximum Nord charged with manslaughter, but it was the third degree murder charge that has many nervous. But in the meanwhile, the Somali and Muslim community have come under attack. There has been a level of volatility, if you will, which again is being suppressed by the white media and to some degree even what is left of the African American media here in our beloved city. That apparently agreements have been reached. This is the reason that pressure is now being applied to African-American leadership, particularly in Minneapolis, to convene a reconciliation summit, if you will, attempt to at least make it appear that they are working on the problems fronting the community, and that ranges the whole plateau, if you will, because it's like being on the edge of a cliff. I mean, everything is bad. Housing, education, if you will, employment, and et cetera. We are still awaiting. We told some individuals earlier this afternoon who asked us what we would specifically be talking about tonight on the Ron and Don program, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We indicated that we would be talking about that which would be of interest to the masses, if you will, to the base, if you will, to the African-American and other communities of color that are trying to survive in this city. Consequently, on that particular note, we are still awaiting here on the Don and Ron program. We are waiting for the reports on the significant success and employment of African Americans in the construction of the U.S. Bank, that facility which hosted the Super Bowl in February, if you will. We have yet to see from the Minnesota legislature or the special committee comprised of both the House and the Senate of the Minnesota legislature, which was to make available information, talking in terms of the number of jobs and et cetera. We had allegedly had a 36% goal, employment of African Americans and others of color, and folks were talking in terms of compensation, salaries and et cetera, in excess of $25 to $47 million. The Super Bowl situation, still waiting on that information from the Sports Facility Authority, the managers by statute of the operation of the stadium. I think there are a lot of black folks in our city that recognize the fact that they are not included in that definition, if you will. But we are now hearing statements, or we were hearing statements in the days and hours immediately following the Super Bowl here in the early part of February, that as much as $55 million, that's what some of you leaders have been saying in some of your meetings and et cetera. There are a couple of you who are relocating, by the way. We wish you the very best in places like Arizona and Florida, particularly Jacksonville and Atlanta, if you know what I mean. Hey, bon voyage. Enjoy the money, man. But We're being told that that black businesses acquired, accumulated over $55 million in Osorio. That is fascinating because I cannot name for you one single black business that did business in 2016 and 2017 that made over $100,000, if that much. Let's say maybe more like $20,000, if you will. I mean, we don't have any 2, 3, 4, or 5 tails. We don't have any automobile dealerships, if you will. We are a great nonprofit community. You know, in other words, far too many of our people work at nonprofits, and that's just a different world. And our nonprofits are closing the doors. And I know there are some of you that are listening in tonight that are like, why is he doing that? Why is he saying that? We are also hearing that some of our crime-fighting units, like GVI, the Gang Violence Initiative, so now called the Group Violence Initiative, the alphabet G, was a little bit troubling. But the fact of the matter is that word has come down that GVI, the Gang Violence Initiative, was defunded. Funding was stopped for that organization. Which, quote-unquote, allegedly had brought an end. This is fascinating. I mean, this is the fact. It has been discussed, if you will, that the GVI group, the Gang Violence Initiative group, had removed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guns, more than the Minneapolis Police Department. There is an article in one of the community newspapers, the Northside Post or something like that, where a new city council member Cunningham, who is in the first months of his first term, has been here maybe 5 years from Chicago, is indicating that GVI group is the go-to group that if violence takes place on the streets of our beloved city, that GVI is to be summoned by the police, if you will, that they are, quote-unquote, to be the only group allowed to go in. Ultimately, they will be given new titles as navigators, we understand from sources within City Hall and the City Council. That's going to be interesting. Hope they get the right training, given the level of gunfire and et cetera that is taking place in our beloved Shangri-La, our beloved city, if you will. But the Navigator proposition, which was first reported by the editorial board of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the largest newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, that was a part of what was going to be done. Also, there has been an uptick, interesting word, in the mental health situation. Some of our leaders have been meeting with some of the key health facilities, if you will, saying that they have to give them anywhere from $300,000 to $400,000 to $500,000, if you will, to help with the mental health crises. Don't talk much about black-on-black violence, and they definitely don't talk about the opiate problem. If it were not for this current sheriff of Hennepin County, Rich Stanek, who has been talking about this for the last 4 years, but nobody else wanted to touch it, we would probably have another 120, 130 young African-Americans, old African-Americans, and et cetera, as well as a significant number of whites that would have, quote-unquote, been consumed and by the opiate drug activities and et cetera. It is out of control. When we talked about crack, you know, killing black America and et cetera, when Congresswoman Maxine Waters, God bless her, was an assemblywoman in the California legislature. She talked about that in 1985, and she talked in terms of the role of the CIA and the American government in bringing crack cocaine and other instruments of death into South Central LA and et cetera. People said she was crazy. When we talked about the problem of drugs here in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, the devastating effect that it was having on the young and the old, The right group of African Americans and their white liberal friends were rolled out to say there was no drug problem. In fact, I can well remember 20 years ago when the then chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, Tony Boza, God bless him, how you doing, Tony? And the then mayor of the city of Minneapolis, the former United States representative in the House, Representative Don Frazier, had said there was no gang problem, if you will, in Minneapolis. And then a young white girl was shot and killed in Powderhorn, in Nicollet Park, now known as Martin Luther King Jr. Park, there in South Minneapolis. Yes, a young Caucasian woman was executed, if you will, on the orders of Mama D, for all of you that pretend that you have forgotten that scenario and situation. And it changed the course of this city and how it dealt with its black population and et cetera. We are seeing a repeat of that, going back for a moment to the stress that is now taking place inside of the Somali and Muslim community in the situation involving Officer Mohammed Nord, if you will. There has been much discussion behind closed doors and meetings with the Chamber of Commerce and others. By the way, Chamber of Commerce will probably be financing the Juneteenth activities in our beloved city in a couple of months. The Juneteenth, which has basically died since it was forced out of the Glenwood Park area there around Glenwood and Theodore Worth. Actually, it's called Theodore Worth. Us old-timers call it Glenwood because that's really the name, if you will. It appears that the Downtown Council and others want to see at least the pretense of activities, merrymaking, I use that word again, merrymaking by the Negro community, that the coloreds are happy, if you will, dance, buck and wing, money with different kinds of facilities, you know, selling hot dogs, you know, pancakes, whatever it is that you sell. We're talking about an event that 12, 13 years ago had as many as 35,000 people coming to Juneteenth and et cetera. But what happened, the city of Minneapolis and the city also in absolute proximity to Minneapolis, Golden Valley, white community indicated they were tired of all that boogalooing and all them loud noises and et cetera, and that 35,000 people were too many Negroes, if you will, and the politics began to play. Pressure was put on the park board of Minneapolis, who now is trying to revitalize, if you will, along with the Minneapolis Public Schools. Some are saying that Phyllis Wheatley has a role in it. Phyllis Wheatley really doesn't have a role. Phyllis Wheatley's just barely hanging on like a number of other organizations. By the way, people should spend a little bit more time taking a look at the list of nonprofits in the African-American community that are going under, if you will. Only the nonprofit is being run by the former councilman Don Samuels, who is also a school board member, and his lovely wife, Nas, the only organization that seems to be operating with a significant windfall, sitting on about $24 million. Wow. There are some organizations, like the Urban League and others, that if they could get, you know, 1/50th of that, they would probably be happy. We're really not in good shape in the African-American community. We're not supposed to talk about it, you know. But on our program, the Don and Ron program coming from Minneapolis, when we open the phone lines and et cetera, we have a lot of listeners, but people have gotten to the place where they are scared to speak out. Let me give you another example tonight, coming to you again from our studio headquarters here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. The light rail is getting ready to come into North Minneapolis. All many of you folks out there for the last month have been looking at the destruction of Penn Avenue. Penn Avenue, for our listening audience in other places around the country and around the world, is a primary street, if you will, a main arterial going through the heart of the Negro community, starting way up at the very top of the city limits, if you will, going all the way out to the very end of the city, all the way into Bloomington and Richfield and et cetera. Well, anyway, what has happened is that in 2010, a series of informational sessions were being monitored by a young lady by the name of Lisa Crockett. And Ms. Crockett is really a hero when one talks about the effort that she put in 8 years ago. My God, it's been 8 years trying to alert this community and our leadership that light rail was getting ready to come in and that a lot of African Americans were going to be displaced, if you will. There would be significant financing. There would be a lot of jobs for white folks, if you will. For about 2.5 years, there were meetings at UROC and conversations. In fact, I saw in some circumstances, I attended many of the meetings, as many as 200 people crammed into the assembly room at UROC. That's the University of Minnesota's experimental laboratory on black folks, if you will. Boy, they experiment on us, too. And North Point, as it is now called, formerly Pilot City, plays a significant role in the gentrification, if you will, of the African American, and particularly helping to provide the necessary conditions that basically are guaranteeing a serious problem that borders on genocide, if you will. I would refer those of you that would take the time, you need to take a look at the book, Medical Apartheid, by Dr. Washington, Henrietta Washington, if you will. Much research dealing with the Columbia University out there with Dr. Chiquete, who was brought here from Rochester, New York. For those of you out in New York in the housing projects there, you certainly remember Dr. Chiquete. I know the area very well. We did some specific work even years before that in 1965 and 66 as a part of the Alinsky program. Yes, yes, yes. I was a part of the Alinsky program, one of the most dangerous programs that the federal government put together, but it was to keep us young Negroes back then, 1965 and 66, under control. The program was funded and operated out of the University of Syracuse, if you will. But I met some great people in Syracuse. Can still remember out there on South Ave, if you will. We can remember the Central Village housing projects there in Syracuse, New York, and et cetera. Saul Alinsky, who made much money. At first, in fact, Saul Alinsky had become renowned for a situation almost, ooh, my God, 30 years earlier when he fought with the University of Chicago over conditions on the south side of Chicago, a project that was called in Back of the Yards, if you will. Yeah, for those of you that are close to your computers, feel free, as we're giving you this history lesson, if you will, to grab that little mouth, if you will, call these programs up, take a look at some of this historical importance, and particularly keep in mind, particularly those of you that are African American or persons of color, this is what genocide is all about. But again, I want to let you off the hook. See if you can find your copy of the book Medical Apartheid and The Man Who Cried I Am by John Williams. A excellent piece, first published in 1965, a book that was as current as the battle that was going on in the United States of America before, between Black America and a repressive American government. Yes, yes, the documentation is there. It's just too bad that we've lost sight of our history. Now, back to Penn Avenue in Minneapolis, if you will, particularly North Minneapolis. The necessary improvements are being made. Light rail, which was initially supposed to come through in 2014, money's kind of got held up. Some things happened. The Met Council, that's the Metropolitan Council, a semi-governing entity, if you will, which really violates some aspects of the Minnesota Constitution and Minnesota law. But hey, folks don't want to deal with it, think it's great, you know, think it's going to take care of the problem of Negroes, particularly in North Minneapolis. Oh, yes, we have to talk like this because this is what has happened. Now, right now, major construction is going on from an area of approximately, let's see, 15 blocks north to south, and then another 10 blocks east to west. In fact, my good friend, the Major Lewis King's operation, the OIC, now finds itself with dirt piled up in front of its front door as it is losing some of its properties and et cetera. Everybody's quiet. Nobody says nothing. But I want to go back to Lisa Crockett, a young African-American woman and a expert with regards to technology, if you will, who for 4 years worked extremely hard to alert her community, make her community know and understand what was happening, if you will. As we said, it was put the light rail, which is to go down Penn to Olson Highway to downtown, if you will, with actually only one stop in the Negro community. Yes, 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 yes. You know, the Met Council and their representatives, including a man by the name of Gary Cunningham, the husband of the former mayor of this city who was defeated in November. Mr. Cunningham, who represents that part of North Minneapolis that we are talking about, in other words, Lowry, Broadway, Penn, Lindale, Floyd B. Olson Memorial Highway, and et cetera, the representative on the Met Council clearly knows what the deal is all about, how things have been cut. The number of African-American families that will lose their housing, oh, yes, 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 yes. I take you back again to the writings of Ms. Lisa Crockett during the period of 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013. In fact, I'm just going to be so arrogant, I'm going to suggest you go to my website, if you will, and go back and take a look at articles that I was writing in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, broadcasting on radio program and et cetera, about what was getting ready to happen, the many projects that were promised to the African-American community in that period of 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, and never took place, never happened. That is one of the reasons that there is so much economic depression and oppression within the African-American communities of both North and South Minneapolis, if you will. It is the reason that so many of our young people see nothing but hopelessness. They really see no future. And so consequently, they've almost acquired a suicidal mentality. God help us if our young people, led by the Somali community, make a decision that it is time to take the final step. Put on those vests, if you know what I'm talking about, and for those of you who say you're internationalist and quote-unquote follow closely what is happening, you know what we're talking about. If that begins to happen in the United States of America, we will be a nation that, as Donald Trump said yesterday, that he will close this country down. Now, people thought he was just shutting down the Congress and the government. Now, Donald Trump's talking about closing this nation down, making a visible wall around this entire nation from the Canadian border to the border with Mexico, to the Rio Grande, if you will, and et cetera. These are dangerous times. But right now, we're concentrating tonight on our own beloved Shangri-La, if you will, state of Minnesota, the Twin Cities, and et cetera. And we started out by indicating that it's hopeful that the summit, reconciliation, just like they did in South Africa 20 years ago, reconciliation but to try to bring leadership together, try to pick a pathway, if you will, put in place a plan, a well-designated, well-crafted plan to try to save the African-American community here in the state of Minnesota and in the Twin Cities. We repeat again one of the breaking stories at the very top of this program, and that was the Battle Royal that took place with over 200 Somalis battling with police. And in fact, really in some respects, as we move into the final 28 minutes of tonight's program, actually overwhelmed the police. So we know that the police did not pull their weapons and fire the weapons into the air, and et cetera. That was a measure put together for other reasons, including, you know, trying to accumulate and have provided to some of these organizations the monies to deal with mental health problems. Now, we do have mental health problems. There's no doubt about it. But if a person is going to come to the table talking about something as demanding intellectually and creatively and et cetera as dealing with mental health, you know, you at least need to have some functionary contact and understanding of what it is. You just don't get $250,000 from the mayor or whoever it is you think you're going to get it through Fairview or someplace like PET. And that you're going to go out here and deal with young minds that are being lost, if you will, with the anger, frustration, the hopelessness, and et cetera, that is taking place. So this is not only confined to the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, my friends. You know this, and I know. It is all across the country. Some places it is being handled in a positive way better. In other places it's being handled in the most negative way to the detriment of the survival of the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. I listened to Donald Trump, and I listened to some of his black minions, if you will, such as the rapper Kanye West this afternoon, yesterday actually, making a statement about the fact that black people should have broke off the yoke for 400 years of slavery. The man is a fool. When you talk in terms of the numbers of life, Mr. West, that were lost with the sons and daughters first being killed on the shores of Black Africa, being dumped into the Atlantic Ocean, and then being beaten to death, raped, murdered, and et cetera for over 400 years, trying to break, having their hands and fingers cut out, cut off, their eyes gouged out for reading a book. You understand, for even knowing, and this is really something that white folks think is funny sometimes, but it's really not. It shows the mean-spiritedness of this nation and its relationship with people of color. People were actually sometimes beaten and whipped if they were tricked into knowing what right and left was. I mean, really. You know, the closest movie, which is what people basically deal with nowadays, was 12 Years a Slave, the movie 12 Years a Slave. That was an excellent movie with regards to the mean-spirited philosophy and conduct of this nation, if you will. And here we are again in an enclave called the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, in which people want you to believe that white folks are good to black people here. That's just not true, my friends. And for those that, let me do it like this. 27th of April and this past Sunday, the Minneapolis Star Tribune and the St. Paul Pioneer Press in the reverse. It was the Pioneer Press on the 27th of April, and it was the Minneapolis Star Tribune this past Sunday. Talked about, and this was something that was interesting because on this program weeks ago, we had a state representative and a young lady who said she was involved with working on the issues and matters of out-of-home placement, adoptions, and et cetera, in which it's no different what has been happening. And let me give you the context for our worldwide audience, if you will. It is no different than in the absolute context of what happened to the Aborigines in Australia and what happened to our Native Americans, brothers and sisters, if you will, the real indigenous people of this continent, if you will, where the children of the oppressed were taken, quote unquote, and culturally cleansed. That is a terminology that we used to use quite a bit back in the 1960s as we prepared for the conflict that would sweep across this country. And the articles in the St. Paul Pioneer Press and the Minneapolis Star Tribune in the last, what, 5 days, you know, opened a deep wound. And yet I hear, including state representative who was on this program, make statements that they aren't interested in knowing and understanding the history. They want to go in their own direction as millennia and whatever. And I asked them the question, did they know about two black representatives or legislators? The one was Senator Robert Lewis, Bob Lewis, as they called him, a veterinarian. A man who actually, for those of you that are also listening here locally, represented for a number of years the city of St. Louis Park, and Hopkins and others in the vicinity, and a gentleman who was a state representative from way out there in Lakeville, Ray Pleasant, Representative Pleasant and Senator Lewis worked very hard to try to change the laws and the procedures and to deal with how these human service entities in the county and the state dealt with the displacement, if you will, of African-American children and etc., some of whom have gone into adult life, some of whom have probably even left this world and gone to the other side of life, if you will, how they were treated. But what happened 20 years ago, a group of African-American women led by a woman by the name of Carol Ann White, former member of the Minneapolis School Board, educator, if you will, who relocated and left here about 5 years ago. But Carol Ann White and a number of other women, Lorraine Smallert, whose husband is a legendary sports figure and one of the most successful coaches in the history of the state of Minnesota at St. Paul Central, Floyd Smallert, if you will. Evelyn Eubanks and other women, black women, stood on the corner there at Plymouth and Penn, Penn Avenue again, and tried to call attention as they prepared to march on the state capitol about what was happening to the black children, to the black babies, and et cetera. And by and large, the black leadership of our community, though certainly Ms. White, as an elected public official, was in a leadership role and et cetera. She won, in fact, she won citywide in being elected to the Minneapolis Public School Board of Education. But she ultimately felt that it was a battle to be won in this state and return to her native Missouri, if you will, to try to continue the battle with folks that she felt were probably more enlightened. Ms. Smallert is still here. She has a summer program for the young, if you will, has been doing it for, my God, what, 15 years, is a great voice, has, you know, came here from another location. She and Mr. Smallert were married in the early 1960s. He received his degree in education, came back to Minnesota, if you will, and became, as said, one of the great success stories, and is one of the most recognized African-American leaders in our sister city of St. Paul, if you will. He's also recognized here in our sister city of Minneapolis. The reason I give you that is because one of the things that we have lost here in our beloved Minneapolis and St. Paul, or as I refer to it as our Shangri-La, if you will, is that we have no sense of history. We have been stripped of our history and the understanding and et cetera. We have not a clue of the rich history of the Negro, the sons and daughters of the African throughout this entire state, marching in lockstep with their red brothers and sisters, if you will. I always remind people of the following, and I like to always give dates, you know, so that people don't have to stumble around. Let's say it's 1924. It's a couple years after one of the worst and most savage race conflicts in the history of the state in the city of Duluth, which was the third largest city in the state of Minnesota and had the third largest Negro population in 1921. When three Negroes were taken, and we're coming up on that in early June, by the way. There is a memorial to them, these three young men who were working for the circus and had come to Duluth and were charged falsely, if you will, by a white woman with raping them. And they were taken from the county jail, the St. Louis County Jail. That's St. Louis County is where the city of Duluth is located. In fact, it's one of the largest counties geographically in the United States, if you will. The three individuals were taken from that jail that night. The chief of police had said he had to go up about 120 miles to the substation of the St. Louis County Sheriff's Department to a place called Hibbing, Minnesota. It's all a part of the history. And what happened, a crowd of over 20,000 Caucasians, 20,000, it was a Sunday, and they gathered, they picnicked in the Septa, they brought their children in the Septa, and then around 5 o'clock, 5-ish, if you will, over 1,500 white marauders stormed the jail. Some of the guards at the St. Louis County Jail tried to fight back. They stormed in. They were able to get to the closest Negroes, three young black men, beat them senseless, mutilated their bodies, tore their testicles from their body, if you will, and then hung them from the light post that adorned, if you will, the front of the public safety building / St. Louis County Jail. But later, at least another 40 to 45 Negroes were shot, killed, and thrown into Lake Superior. If it had not been, see, I'm giving you this history, so that I don't have to worry about listening to somebody talk about that's just something somebody made up, because we don't know what happened back in 1921. Well, you know, I don't know what happened in Europe, you know, in the 1930s. But what happened, if it had not been for the governor of the state of Wisconsin, the sister city of Duluth is Superior, Wisconsin, if you will, the sheriff in Douglas County, which is the county seat of Superior, Wisconsin, put his deputies on alert. He called the governor in Madison, Wisconsin, and indicated that Negroes were being killed and lynched across the lake, if you will, of Lake Superior. And the governor of Wisconsin called the National Guard in and then contacted, and this is ironic, and this is all a part of history, so it's a part of making you understand how things really work around here in quote-unquote the beloved state of Minnesota. The governor of the state of Minnesota at the time of the carnage, and that's really what it was, as Negroes were being torn apart, as Negro women and children were being shot and thrown into Lake Superior. Oh, there are four or five books. In fact, we have some in our personal library. But the governor of Minnesota at that time was named J.A. Burnquist. And he seemed to be a good man. He had to be. He was the president. And for my black listening audience across the world, he was the president, J.A. Burnquist, president of the St. Paul NAACP. And the governor of Wisconsin knew of that relationship and knew that he would have a sympathetic ear because he was very concerned about what you could see from the other side in Wisconsin. In Superior, Wisconsin, as Negroes were being shot, thrown into Lake Superior, as for black people. It reminded me of, it later was a reminder of what happened many years later after Katrina in a place called Oops, New Orleans, Louisiana, as black people were knocked off and shot off the bridges and forced into the water where many African Americans drowned. And so the governor of Minnesota, J.A.A. Burnquist, immediately ordered the Minnesota National Guard, about 1,500 National Guardsmen, primarily from southern Minnesota and the Twin Cities. He commandeered a special train, I think something like 25 coaches and et cetera, and they rushed to the relief of the Negro community in Duluth, Minnesota. Now, the reason all of this is important, I went to school here. I went to junior high school, I matriculated as it pertains to higher education at the University of Syracuse, as I spoke earlier about being a part of the Alinsky program at the University of Syracuse in 1965 and 66 and receiving my certificate and the degree and et cetera. But what basically happened was that that history has been purged, if you will. It's been redacted, if you will. And I never heard until after I had graduated from high school, and because myself and a couple of my associates had gone up to Duluth, and we met a gentleman there by the name of Tiger Jack, the original Tiger Jack. He owned a bar there. He was a stevedore, if you will. He was one tough individual. And he gave us a lesson. This was 1958. And I had no idea, and I can remember returning to my ancestral home in Missouri and talking with one of my two grandfathers. I was very blessed as a black man that I had both of my grandfathers lived to be 92 and 96, if you will. One was a Pullman porter, worked for the Pullman Company for 42 years, waited his last table at the Muehlbach Hotel in Kansas City, Missouri, when he's 92 years old. God bless him. My other grandfather on my mother's side was both a doctor of medicine who did his graduate medicine at the University of Minnesota in 1914. Oh, yes, his name is in the records, Dr. L. Virgil Miller, L.V. Miller, if you will, graduate of Mehara, blah, 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 practiced medicine in Kansas City, Missouri for 62 years. I give you that because it is so important that people understand that black Americans have a history, a lineage, if you will, a relationship with the history of this nation. And it is the reason that I said about 8.5 minutes ago that here in the Twin Cities, now St. Paul, we have lost focus. We have lost our sense of direction, and by consequence, we have lost the mission and the understanding of the mission that we should be committed to as it pertains to the preservation of the sons and daughters of the African. I'm fascinated. You ask people about Duluth, you ask people about some of the great legends of the Negro community going all the way back to the 1850s and 60s and et cetera, and people, you know, act like, you know, just because they just got here from Detroit or Gary or, you know, Chicago, particularly Chicago, that nothing happened until they got here. I learned a lesson from four very great African-Americans. Dr. Thomas Johnson, the doctor of medicine in this city for many years, the legendary Frank Alsop, who rose to the position of vice president of the AFL-CIO, a major in the United States Army, a member of the Chicago Police Department back in the 1930s. I mean, Frank Alsop was a Renaissance man, if you will. And then the legendary Cecil Newman, who founded the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, the oldest, largest Negro newspaper here in the state of Minnesota. And last but not least, the beloved and great Nellie Stone Johnson. They did name a school for her. For those that want to authenticate, if you will, go to your website, check the Board of Education, Minneapolis Public Schools, take a look at schools, and you will find Nellie Stone Johnson Grade School, located right in the heart of North Minneapolis. Nellie Stone Johnson, one of the great, great defenders of the race, born and raised in Lakeville, Minnesota, spent the majority of her high school and et cetera in Rush City, for those of you that are probably listening from around Minnesota. came to Minneapolis in 1921 to live with her aunt, who began school at the University of Minnesota and became the first Negro elected to a political office in the city of Minneapolis in 1944 on a ticket with a man by the name of Hubert Humphrey. Nellie Stone Johnson purged from the Minneapolis Library Board, which was a powerful position in those days because people said she was a fellow, traveler. For those of you that don't know what fellow traveler is, it was a code word for Negroes that were considered to be quote-unquote communists and quote-unquote inclined to be a part, such as Paul Robeson, a part of the communist conspiracy and such. Nellie Stone Johnson was the furthest thing from that. Nellie Stone Johnson was a woman who fought the battle, if you will, and is a legend. And we do understand that ultimately will be finally commissioned and will be placed in the corridors of our beloved state capitol. And we hope that it happens pretty quick, if you will. So tonight we've walked you through some aspects of the history, if you will, starting with the announcement that there will be an attempt to hold a conference on reconciliation of black leadership here in our beloved Minnesota, but particularly in the Twin Cities, and most specifically as it pertains to the problems here in the city of Minneapolis. Let me just say that this is desperately needed. There needs to be some indication and some signal that there will be a return to the days 20 years ago, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, where there was leadership, there was toughness, there was tenaciousness, and et cetera, where there was a sense of pride and commitment, but also there was a commitment to do battle for the rights of the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. Failure to do such will continue us on the path that unfortunately we are on, a community that by and large feels that it is both isolated, rejected, disrespected, and punished, if you will. And so we would hope that on this program tonight, irrespective of what you may think or not think about it, do some research. These programs are a part of the on-demand blog radio. You can call up. In fact, you can call up and listen to every program that Mr. Allen and myself have done on this network and on this program for quite some time, if you will. In fact, going back 7 years, if you will. It's all a part of there. It's all a part of the being logged in and et cetera. So we would hope that for those of you out there that are about consciousness, if you will, you are about the survival and the salvation of the sons and daughters of the African, that you would give some thought to setting goals and setting missions, because as we've said on these programs, oftentimes when we do these independent editorials, if you will, that it is our future, which is our children, that will make a difference. I would always hate to see those of us who are the sons and daughters of the African be referred to as that race or group of people that have become extinct because we paid no attention to that which surrounded us. And in some regards, in the tradition of Star Wars, that which surrounds us is the dark side, and it is not, quote-unquote, the sons and daughters of the African. God bless you, Black Minnesota. Continue to stay strong, but more importantly, may you continue to stay vigilant. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Don and Ron program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Good night. Yeah.